You've landed on The Substance, a podcast aimed at being biblical, thoughtful, and human. Join us here every other week as we engage the culture without the culture war. I'm your host, Philip Marinello, saying thanks for listening. A lot of podcasts out there, and we always appreciate folks who click download or who follow or share the show. Here at The Substance, we are a variety show interested in topics related to faith, culture, and the arts. Previous guests include folks like artist Josh Nadeau from Sword and Pencil, artist Stephanie Stalvey. We had illustrator Rommel Ruiz back in the day on the show, as well as folks like Karen Swallow Pryor, Jamar Tisby, and New York Times film critic Alyssa Wilkinson. This week, I spoke with Ned Bustard, who is a longtime artist, curator, writer now. His home on the internet is over at World's End Images. That's where you can find all the stuff. That'll be in the show notes. That's the number one thing he told me to put out there. He's got a line of books with IVP Kids, where he does stories with beautiful illustrations and tells the stories of saints throughout church history. The first one he did was St. Nicholas. Then he followed it up with St. Patrick. And then what we're talking about this week is St. Valentine. Happy early Valentine's Day, everyone, I guess, as well. These are really beautifully made books. His illustrations are great. And it's we talked about this on the show. I really appreciate these books for what they do, combining what we know as much as we can know historically about these folks, as well as their legends, and blending those two together just in a really effective and moving way. They are meant to both be instructive and engaging and enjoyable, and not just instructive in like, oh, here to just purely teach a lesson, but these are great books to teach virtues to young folks. This was an excellent conversation. Had a great time talking with Ned, and hopefully, sounds like we may have him back to talk about his Every Moment Holy project, which is an incredible, incredible resource. I hope we can make that happen. Every Moment Holy is something that I've followed and enjoyed for a while, and I would love to have that conversation with him. But without further ado, here is my conversation with Ned on St. Valentine. Ned, welcome to The Substance.
Thank you for having me. This will be good.
I'm excited to catch up with you. When did the St. Patrick book come out? That was the first one with the IVP Kids series, right?
Yeah, I think that came out last year. I think I've done one a year pretty much for the last couple of years.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that was what was really exciting. That book just won an award, Kids Book Award. So that was the 2023 award. So yeah, I guess it did come out last year. So that's
snap. Okay.
Patrick was there. Yeah.
Children's books are challenging because it's the illustration, I feel like, is the easier job, like to create something a kid wants to look at and is enjoyable mm-hmm. for a kid to look at versus writing something that goes with it that a kid wants to hear over and over and that a parent is happy to read over and over.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like your first St. Patrick, I think that's the only one I have physically. All that to say, my wife and I have read St. Patrick the Forgiver to our kids, I don't know how many times, and they genuinely really love it. And it's a blast.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, that's one thing that my wife would often say, if a book causes my stomach to hurt, that, you know, it's either a really kitschy story or bad illustrations, she would just throw them away. And I remember one time we were at church and she was going through in the nursery, just pulling books out and just throwing them away. And people were just shocked, like, how can you do such a thing? And she's like, well, it's garbage. Why do we want to give our kids garbage? And she would often quote, I think it was C.S. Lewis talked about, if a book isn't worth reading as an adult, you shouldn't be reading it to a child. And I think that is, you know, you factor all those things together. You say, well, it's got to be good. For some reason, we want our kids to appreciate the good things, but then we give them these little crappy books that we find at the supermarket. Well, that's not going to work. We need to give our kids quality from day one so that they grow in appreciation for what tastes good to their minds and their hearts.
So before we jump right into this current line and then eventually St. Valentine, I've
followed your accounts for a while. I really like your illustration style. You can go in as much detail as you're comfortable with or you want, but what's your like spiritual and artistic biography? Like what's kind of your path to get to where you are now?
I tell people that I never became a Christian, that I basically just came out of the womb following God, me and John the Baptist. I just grew up in the church. My grandfather was a minister for 40 years, and this has always been my world. As with most Christians, I've had seasons of doubt and questioning those things. But I grew up in the church. The understanding, the story of the faith has been central to who I am and to the way I've raised my family. As far as aesthetically, again, I grew up in the church. I went to Christian school, so I grew up in a, shall we say, not visually art-friendly environment. And that has really been the journey of my life, trying to figure out, okay, I care about Jesus, and I also like art, and I got to figure out how these things go together. Because if I can't make them work together, I can't do them both. In college, I came across Francis Schaeffer's Art in the Bible for the first time, and Madeline was Walking on Water. And over the next 10 years or so, really kind of voraciously read everything I could to try to develop a theology for the arts. And that has been a real passion of mine. With my book publishing company, Square Halo Books, a lot of our books are art and faith oriented, because this has just really been important to me, and I've seen how little there was in the church for that. Aesthetically, started out with comic books, still love comic books. In college, I went on a short-term missions trip to Ireland, and it was there I got to see the Book of Kells for the first time. And I think Lewis talks about MacDonald baptizing his imagination. And I think for me, the Book of Kells really baptized my visual imagination. And so that really informed how I proceeded to make my work. And then in addition to that, I did go to Christian school, and this was frowned on. I played Dungeons and Dragons and loved The Hobbit. So there was this large strain in my work, kind of a medieval bent to it. So you combine all those things with the first book for InterVarsity, the St. Nicholas book, they all have this kind of woodcut feel. But I actually started writing that book 20 years earlier and was illustrating it in a woodcut style because I really loved that aesthetic, even before I learned actually how to do printmaking. And
is St. Nicholas the first one?
Yeah. It's St. Nicholas and then Patrick.
Okay.
And then, this new one, Valentine. What was neat was the St. Nicholas was the first book that InterVarsity kids came out with. That was they launched the
whole. Okay, yeah.
Whole
I remember when that launched. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting because that's a whole nother story we can talk about. Just, almost miraculous how that all happened. But I guess in a nutshell, that's my spiritual and aesthetic background.
So I got to ask, longtime listeners will know, we've had a handful of guests, not many, a few that are comics adjacent or comics fans. But I grew up a huge comic fan. Today's Wednesday. I was just at the shop today. What were some of your formative comics experiences? Who were your guys? Who did you read?
Right.
Who did you like?
I figured out recently.
Strike me as maybe a Jack Kirby guy with some of your stuff.
Well, I'm not that old, but yes.
Neither am I.
I have a strong memory of there was an oversized giant Captain America that Kirby did that I bought coming home from the beach one time. I might have been 8 or 9. And that was one of those ones that I really tore into and read over and over. I was thinking the other day, I think one of my first comic books, there was one that was Superman and Batgirl. But my favorite when I was younger was I had the Avengers. Now, and that was a thing for me recently, I guess it's been a decade now that the MCU has been going on,
yep.
But like, I felt vindicated when that all started happening, because I was like, you know, folks, I've been here since day one. Like, I had Avengers. I had a giant Iron Man poster on my wall. I had a giant Hulk, Captain America. I was in high school. I was really into, I mean, obviously X-Men, people love that. But then I was really obsessed with Alpha Flight and Cloak and Dagger. I'm definitely nice. A Marvel follower. I get distressed with DC characters because they're all too much like demigods. And that's what people are tuning into to hear us talking about our
hey.
Our love of comic books.
I guarantee I mean, we're not going to do that, but I guarantee there's a few listeners just getting real jazzed hearing that. No, that's exciting. I mean, people who are visual artists, I feel like comics, cinema is probably my favorite art form, but comics are so special because, especially with people like Kirby and many others, you get somebody who is a writer artist. You're completely in their world when you are engaged. And that's such a special thing. There's actually, he's not a comic book artist, but there's a comic book author that I've been circling who will likely have on the show at some point. But I mean, it's an incredible medium. And when you have people who their main deal is illustrators, almost always comics as a kid, like you said before, your style that you're currently working with now, primarily in this medium, it does resemble the wood carvings. How did that come about for you?
My adult career has been as a graphic designer. So everything is copy paste. I've done a lot of illustration work in Adobe Illustrator. And I got to the point that I started getting really frustrated because there's basically a look you can get with the computer. And I was frustrated with the antiseptic quality of it. I mean, I like a lot of computer art, but you can tell that's what it is. And I found myself longing to make real art, is what I would call it. I mean, not that the other stuff that I did wasn't real art, but I wanted something that was tactile, that was gritty, that felt, just had some gravitas to it. And the Lord brought someone in my life into our church, and his name is Matt Clark. He teaches art down in Florida at a Christian school down there. And he had gotten his MFA in printmaking, and we hit it off and became friends. And I said, hey, why don't you teach? We had a large group of artists at our church, which was bizarre because that never happens. But I said, let's do something and do a workshop, and you can teach us all how to do printmaking. So we organized that. Everyone hated it except for me. And he and I became great friends, and he has basically been, I've been his little Padawan for the last 10 or 15 years. And he kind of introduced me to, I mean, I had taken printmaking in college, but it was a one semester thing, and they were trying to teach a whole bunch of stuff, and I forgot everything. So he really has kind of developed my understanding of the medium. And then I have a friend, Brent Good, who's a professor at Messiah University, who's a printmaker. And between the two of them, they've really helped me a lot to grow as an artist. So yeah, printmaking, the thing that people are know me for now. If you've heard of me at all, it's because of Every Moment Holy, the contemporary prayers liturgies, and now IVP, and both of those lines of books are utilizing my print.
Absolutely. That's exactly what, I mean, you read my mind. Every Moment Holy, I would love to hear about that. One of the things that we have been coming back to a lot, especially the last couple years, we've had three of the Fullness of Time authors on with the little IVP small books on the church calendar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the interest and the being like my generation and younger being drawn back. And I mean, lots of folks actually post 2020, a lot of the folks going through the reassessment and the deconstruction and reconstruction, etc. A lot of us have kind of felt the pull of, or at least the question of, hey, like the church universal has had a lot of things that they've done for a long, long time all around the world. Like, what happened? Like, why don't we do any of that stuff anymore? So, I mean,
why do we keep reinventing the wheel? Like, maybe someone had the wheel figured out, and let's look into that. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. When Esau McCulley came on for Lent, that was such a powerful thing for me as a father and a husband with a young family going, okay, we want to follow God. We definitely know some people we don't want to be like. Like, how do we model ourselves? How do we do spiritual formation when we're like, man, some of the ways and some of the environments we're brought up, not really for us. What do we do? And then go, oh, no, like there's a long, rich tradition that lots of people here and abroad are participating in. Why don't we check that out?
Yeah, go figure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with Every Moment Holy was an amazing project for me. I always joke that I'm a Presbyterian and we don't believe in the Holy Spirit, which is obviously not true, but that there's these certain things that have happened in my life that I point to that I'm like, you know what? I don't care what you say. That was a miracle. And there was no way that could have happened except for God is involved in time and space. And Every Moment Holy is one of those things. There was no reason I should have ever been involved with that project at all. I had no idea who the publisher was. I had never heard of Rabbit Room. I had bought Andrew Peterson's CD once, but I bought it because there was other people in the CD. I didn't know his music. And so there was all these reasons I should not have been involved in that. And again, that's a long story, but God orchestrated that to bring it together. And basically Andrew Peterson and I were sitting down in my house one day talking, and he was talking about what he was doing and told me about this project, Every Moment Holy, that they're working on. And I said, I don't normally throw myself at people, but I have to throw myself at you for this project, because I grew up in a liturgical tradition. I was in a small denomination called Reformed Episcopalian, and we had prayer books. And that is just part of who I am at my core, is I believe in liturgical worship. And that was really central to who I was. I also grew up in a more of independent, non-denominational high school and grade school. So I knew that there was this whole group of the whole part of the church that had no desire to ever look at a prayer book because that was of the devil. And then I loved the prayer book. And then I was like, but you know, sometimes the prayer book doesn't really communicate well or cover all the bases. I remember that as a kid wanting a prayer for fill in the blank, you know, and I would, I remember losing my girlfriend. I'm like, oh, I need a prayer for getting a girlfriend back. And you know, you flip through the prayer book. There's no prayer.
Yeah.
It's not that one. Not going to be there. So, you know, so I understood the need for, let's say, momentary prayers. And I thought, this is exactly the kind of project I would love to be, you know, like I just had to be involved. And a lot of things happened and it almost didn't happen, but then, you know, it came together. And it's been one of the best formative things for me as an artist and as a Christian. And professionally, people actually know who I am now, which was a novel thing as well.
No, the stuff that they put out is so rich. And I feel like even the people who are afraid or averse of liturgy, like I grew up pretty non-liturgical, other than everybody thought, like, everybody loved the Valley of Vision. That was the one thing I was allowed to be like, this is good. This is the good one. And it's great. Like, there's a lot of great stuff in there. But sure. I was like, as I get older, I was like, well, why did we get one thing? why did we just get one? So is Every Moment Holy, is that still, what is your current, are you guys still putting stuff out regularly?
Oh yeah, we just released in November, volume 3. So volume 1 was just kind of ran the gamut. Volume 2 was death, hope, and grief. So that was a little bit more focused on the grieving process. And then this new one is called The Work of the People. And this one is a little different than the other two in that my friend Doug McKelvey, who wrote the other ones, he did not write all the prayers. Like, what we did is we brought in other people to make it more of a collaborative event. And because he brought other people in, I brought in other artists as well. So there's different artists and different writers in this book. It follows more the pattern of the first book, kind of covering the whole range of life. And there's some good stuff. And there's also in this one, the new one, there's living and dead artists or writers. So like Dorothy Sayers has a prayer in there, and Augustine and whatnot.
Let's get to IVP kids. This Let's is why talk Krista about that. Sent me. Krista sent me the book so that we could promote the book. So you grew up liturgical. So you were you more familiar with like the saints and the church fathers? Was that like more a no. part of your formation and education?
Yeah, it wasn't really. I mean, like I said, I went to a Christian school, and I think folks who knew that I had that my church background was liturgical kind of viewed me as being basically Catholic. So like I think that I got lumped sure. into
yeah.
You know, lumped into that, well, you're one of those people with smells and bells. But ironically, the Reformed Episcopal Church, at least at that time, it's become much higher in the past couple years, but it was very low church movement. So it was very not saints, not smells and bells, not I mean, they had a prayer book, but everything was it was very much low church. I would say it was I'm a ruling elder in a PCA church now, and I think I described it as PCA with a prayer book, and that was my background. So I didn't have saints. That wasn't part of who I was. The liturgy part was, but not the saints, except for St. Patrick, because I was Irish and of course I loved St. Patrick.
So how did the St. Nicholas fixation and so St. Patrick was the second book? That was the yeah. first book that they sent me physically. And I've read that dozens and dozens of times. How did the fixation, was it, oh, I bet I could sell this book, or was
no,
it
well, the story? The St. Nicholas book came about because of a childhood fixation with Santa Claus. So I loved the whole magic of Santa Claus. I loved the animated Rankin-Bass, Santa Claus is coming yeah. to town, and all those, you know, and that's what I grew up on. As a little kid, I would draw Santa Claus, and I really loved the whole mystique of those stories. My first child, Carrie, when she was born, I was thinking, I really want kind of that magic to be part of our raising our child so that she gets some of that. So like we started getting stockings and hanging stockings by the fire. But I also didn't want to have the problem. Like as a kid, my mom would say, "Well, this is from Santa." I'm like, "Well, okay, no, I want full credit for all the presents that I give my child." So I didn't want to do that. And so I was like, "All right, that's not going to work." But I'm like, "Okay, stocking. I can let Santa Claus have a stocking." But then I thought, "Well, I really want my daughter to grow up." Knowing that Christmas is about Jesus. So I wanted to have that real Christ-centered approach to the holiday, but I also didn't want to lose the magic of Santa Claus. So I felt really torn. And then I thought, well, I'm going to write a story. So I wrote basically a story, and I illustrated it it was drawings, but it was made to look like woodcuts because I loved woodcuts at the time. And I knew that was the aesthetic for this book. And I wrote the story that had the history of St. Nicholas, but then also I thought, oh, how does he get around the world in you know, one night? It struck me as a big Doctor Who fan that time and space stop for St. Nicholas. So my whole idea with this story was that he started walking out on Christmas Eve, and the miracle was that his pack never got lighter, that he would just go from house to house to house, always sharing gifts and sharing the love of Christ, you know, the givingness of Christ through this long pilgrimage. So that was my idea. And I so then for 20 years, I was tooling that story and eventually got to the point that I'm like, I think this is ready to share with someone, but I didn't know how to get it to a publisher. And that was, and then through my friendship with Lucy Shaw, again, six different miracles happened. And I got it to InterVarsity, and that became their first book. So so as far as going, answering your question, that was how I got into the saints. It was Santa Claus to St. Nicholas. And then, and like I said, I was big fan of St. Patrick. And once you start getting into that world, you can't stop. It's a drug.
So formatively, St. Patrick, was that just culturally or did you like
culturally? Because I'm third generation Irish. Like my great grandfather came across on the boat. Great grandmother came. I've been to the family farm in Donegal. So like being Irish was very much who I am. And it was so that was where that stuff came from. And then, like I said, I discovered the Book of Kells and then St. Columba and St. Brendan. I got obsessed with St. Brendan and all of those things.
So St. Valentine, and as we are coming up on February here, this was kind of a nice timely. This was all the stars aligned. This one was a very well executed launch coming up here. What were your thoughts considering a St. Valentine project? Like when St. Nicholas, St. Patrick, I feel like the next logical step is St. Valentine, but what was kind of your thought process approaching that?
It was not that was not the logical step for me. I mentioned I have a daughter. I actually have three daughters, and my next thought was I need to do a female saint. So I came up with a whole list of female saints. But even when I was doing like the book signing for St. Patrick, I remember people saying, are you going to do St. Valentine? And I was like, no, I'm going to do. And I would list all the female saints that I would do. And they're like, yeah. But what about Valentine? And I'm like, no, I don't want to do Valentine. I have all my daughters. You don't understand. And then I was talking to my editor at InterVarsity Press, and she said, our distributor asked us if we had a book on Valentine, how do you feel about writing a book about St. Valentine? And I was at that point, I'm like, okay, God, the writing is on the wall. I see it now. Valentine is the next book to do. I didn't want to do Valentine, but I'm like, all right, it's obviously God's will. I'm not going to stand in the way. And so that was how it came to be that basically the people wanted it. So we had to give it to them.
I like it. What was your process? Everybody knows the broad strokes, but if St. Nicholas and St. Patrick were two ones that you kind of spent a lot of time with, how did you approach telling the St. Valentine myth, legend, anchoring it in theology, but also in, let me say this. I have only just got the PDF a few days ago, so I've only had a little bit of time with it. I love in St. Patrick how you both tell the broad strokes of history that are certain and then also include the myths and the legends and the magic while acknowledging it without throwing it away.
Right.
I really love that balance.
Well, and I'm glad you do, because not everyone feels that way. If you look on Amazon, there's some people who are very unhappy with me because I do exactly that.
Well, you were talking about Santa. My wife and I, the last few years, we've done a similar thing where it's like, we don't want to make this about materialism and we don't want to 3, 4, 5 years from now, like shatter our kids' trust when he's like, oh, like Santa's not real. Like we don't want to tell him something that's not true. And we don't want to tell them, like, we don't want to divert their attention in an unhelpful way. But yeah, we want the magic. We want the fun. So I'll say I really appreciate that about St. Patrick. And with the Valentine too, like what was the approach of obviously February? Like love is a thing that we all desire to find and experience. Right. But what was the goal in the process kind of approaching it once you resigned yourself to the reality?
Once I gave up to God's will, it's always painful, but you have to do it. With St. Valentine, I knew that it was St. Valentine's Day. That was about all I knew. So I thought, well, I'm going to dig into the history like I did with the other two books and we'll mix the history and legend. When I started doing the research, I found out there is no history, like almost nothing. Like the things we know about St. Valentine are there was a guy whose name St. Valentine and he was martyred, but maybe there was two or five and we're not quite sure, was he a priest or was he a doctor or maybe a bishop? And it's just murky. So I thought, well, this is not good. The other guys, I had a lot to build on. There's nothing here. I mean, really almost next to nothing. And you figure he's, if he, you know, the if we've got the right guy, he's born in 226. I mean, this is forever ago, so it's not surprising that we don't have much information on him. So I had The Golden Legend, which was it's a book from, I think that's the 1200s, translated in the 1400s, that has all the hagiography of different saints. It's got the story where he heals the blind girl, and he also comes in front of Claudius and basically preaches the gospel, and then he gets decapitated. So that's I knew that, but I realized that, well,
doesn't make for a great children's book.
It doesn't. And if I'm picking up this book, I'm like, ooh, St. Valentine's. I know what St. Valentine's Day. It's candy, it's hearts, it's cherubs. That's what I'm wanting to buy. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, love. That's what people expect. But then the other thing is like, well, yeah, love. But the love that is communicated to us in our culture now for Valentine's Day is, you know, it's lace and sultry, you know, candles, and, you know, it's
also not a kid's book.
Not a kid's book. And I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? And then I thought, well, my favorite saint is St. Clive's. C.S. Lewis wrote the book Four Loves. And I thought, this is what I'll do. I'm going to build this off of the Four Loves, because then I can basically teach kids that love is more than just romance. And I thought that was, for me, the most important thing in this book is, okay, I'm gonna give you a book that is about this holiday that's connected to, you know, frilly hearts and candy hearts and candy and all, you know, flowers. But I'm gonna give you something that as a parent you can actually build off of. Like here I can actually teach my kids love is, you know, that you have storge. So love is this love of just the familiar love of, I love my dog. That's a decent love. That's a completely legitimate love. I have philia. So that's friendship love. Completely decent love that we don't talk enough about. That this is a deep love that you can have, and has nothing to do with Eros and Victoria's Secret. But that you've got those two, then you've got agape, as Lewis would say. I would always say agape love, but anyway, that, and then you also have Eros. So then I go through all four of those in the book and teach through the story, or introduce through the story, that love is not just X's and O's and you know, Valentine's Day cards.
No, that's, I'm knowing, hearing you say that, I'm gonna go back through the book with that lens. A Saint Valentine book both seems like the obvious next candidate after the first two. But then thinking about it, like, what would that be? Especially based on what you've done with the first two, like you said, mixing history and legend to also highlight like either the gift giving or the forgiveness. With this is like kindness and love, but like, and in what I have a PDF. It was like 25, 30 pages. Like that's a lot. That's quite a feat to do. And like one page is an illustration, the other page is text. So you're like, you have the actual amount of pages to like give the message. That's a tall order.
Yeah. The one thing if you look at the cover, it's St. Valentine walking with his Valentine's in hand. And then he's surrounded by hearts, but the hearts aren't just red hearts. They're red hearts, white hearts, blue hearts, and green hearts.
Ah, yes.
And what I do is, when I'm talking about the different loves, I switch colors of the hearts in the book. Now it's subtle, but I explain that in the back so that parents can get clued in. So that, okay, when I'm talking about friend love, that's true blue love. So you've got blue hearts. And when I'm talking about the love of God, agape, that's white hearts. So you see that through the book. And I'm hoping that will help clue people into that there's a bigger story that I'm telling than just, like I said, chocolates and roses.
Noticed the different colors, but through the Lewis model of the four loves, that's very good. That's why you make the big bucks, Mr. Professional Artist here.
Yeah, well, I had to explain it to you, so I don't know how clear. Yeah. But this podcast will go out, and then people will know, and then they'll think I'm brilliant, and, you know, baby steps.
One of the things that I always love doing with authors is taking a look at the dedications. And obviously, with writing a book about St. Valentine, it would make sense that you would dedicate it to your wife. But tell me about your dedication to your wife in the book.
Yeah, so let me get that out. That's dedicated. It says, "This book is for my kind-hearted Leslie Ann, with the happiest of memories of how our love story commenced in 1988 with a Valentine's Day card." That really happened. Like, we were in college, and I was in a Christian fellowship group, and as you know, with Christian fellowship groups and churches in general, there's more women than there are men. And so I had a lot of female friends, and I thought,
which is great if you're a single guy, I guess.
Yeah, the averages are in my favor. So I thought, well, I had a lot of good friends, and I thought, well, I'm going to give Valentine's Day cards to them because, you know, they didn't have boyfriends. And I thought, well, that'll be a nice thing to do. But I had fallen in love with Leslie. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And then I gave her a card as well as I gave to everyone. But hers was this, you opened it and it said, "Captivated by you," or "Captivated by your love," something like that. And later on, I found out that she went in a terror-stricken run across campus to her friends, like, "Ned just gave me this card. How do you interpret it?" And they're all like, "He gave us cards too, you know that." But they're like, but wait, look at what he wrote here. And that was when she started kind of getting the clue that there might be more going on than just friendship. We were moving past philia, and now it took me another year before I was able to talk her into dating me. But that was when I was working on this book. I love dedicating my books and thinking about the dedication. I thought, oh yeah, that's right. I had forgotten all about that part of our romance. I thought, yeah, that's just perfect. Like, Valentine is, all of a sudden, St. Valentine became much more important to me because I was like, yes, without Valentine's Day, would I even have married my wife? I don't know. It gave me the great opportunity to give her a card that was very thought-provoking and provocative.
I always like asking authors about that. But then when I saw that particular dedication with this particular topic, I was like, oh, like, started with a Valentine's Day card, like, perfect.
Almost was like, yeah, it was providential. Like, when I think back, I'm like, yeah, wow, who would have thought? Like, because, you know, what are the odds that your relationship starts with the Valentine's Day card? Usually it doesn't.
That's bold. Yeah.
Go out on a date first.
I don't know
first.
Too many people. Yeah. Yeah. You develop that a little bit. So you said previously, before you elected to go the Valentine's route, you had a list. What's next?
I don't know what's next. We haven't actually committed to new. University and I are talking about other books, and I've got a couple ideas that they like, and we're toying with. Your listeners, who are readers, need to buy a lot of Valentine and Patrick to make the publisher realize that this is something good. Kids love these books, but if they don't sell, they're not going to make more of them. That's the cold, hard facts.
The unfortunate art and commerce relationship.
I mean, honestly, I'm amazed that we came out with three because, again, talking about saints, how popular are these books going to be? Like, it's
marketing
not
saint books to kids also.
Exactly. I mean, it's really a bold move. When you think about it, these books should not exist because certainly for like most of InterVarsity, their customer base would be Protestant. So, you know, you've got that whole swath of their base who are like scared of saints, you know, let alone, you know, they want to buy a book about saints. So
for their children.
Children. No, yeah. You start teasing this out and you're like, this isn't a good marketing plan at all. So I'm just so grateful that IVP Kids has, you know, jumped in and done. I mean, they did three books and we've done, like you said, they've come out one a year. So they don't even know if they're going to be successful because you just haven't had the time to see, you know, the sales.
That's true. So listeners, and that's why we do the show too, not just to sell books, but to highlight things of value for, like,
right.
I mean, if I didn't do this podcast, I surely probably wouldn't know about most of the stuff that publishers are doing. I'd see this, the same, like, top one or two books from each publisher that everybody talks about at the end of the year. But that's why I try to, that's why I reached out to you, not just so that I could get an episode on Valentine's Day to be trendy. I was like, no, these are good resources that I'm sure that people who don't get the IVP catalog, which is probably most people, may not be aware of.
No, I think it's really important. I think I used to be the art director for a music magazine back in the 90s, and we focused on alternative and hip hop and hardcore music. And I was glad to do that because I knew people weren't going to get it. Like they would never hear, you know, they knew that about Michael B. Smith and Amy Grant, and like, yeah, love them. They're great, but there's more out there. And I think that's the value. I love, you know, that you're doing this podcast, because if you don't talk about these things, people will never know. But, you know, in my heart, I know there's got to be other stuff out there, but if I can't figure out how to get to it, you know, we have the internet. Isn't that wonderful? But I don't know what to Google. So you have to tell me to, you know, what to look at. What are the good things? I mean, that's the thing we were talking about, Every Moment Holy. I didn't expect anyone to buy that, because I'm like, how are people going to find out about it? And it's such an odd duck. I don't know how to even get, but you know, it's a quality thing. And if we can get people directed, you know, lead them up to quality material, you know, maybe they'll buy it. Maybe their life will be a little bit more beautiful.
Nope. I love that. So listeners, that's going to be in the show notes. Check it out. Buy one for yourself. Buy one for a friend.
I'm not going to say no.
Buy one for a friend with kids. Yeah. Buy one for the most conservative Protestant, you know, and break down some walls.
And hey, are there grandmoms out there? You know, you've got grandkids. All your grandkids need this book. Plain and simple.
It's true.
At my book release party yesterday, a woman bought 7 copies. Because she had, you know, 19 grandkids. So she needed them all to have them. And I was like, yeah, well, you go, lady.
And again, not to be crass, but you picked good ones, where every year there's St. Patrick's, there's Christmas, and there's Valentine's. So
it's
like
coming around.
If you're going to build,
yeah.
If you're going to build a base, these could be annual sellers.
That's right. That's right. Well, and.
Or.
And grandparents, you know, your kids are going to come, your grandkids are going to come by. You need a tradition, reading about St. Nicholas, reading about St. Patrick. These are nice traditions, you know.
And hey, if they sell well, maybe in 5 years on the anniversary of St. Nicholas, you can get one of those like thick cardboard like case holders where you can put all three of them. Like,
you know,
I love those.
You're looking deep into my heart there. I desperately, now that I've got three, I'm like, I can justify a slipcase.
You can do it.
Yeah, and if we come out with some female saints, maybe it's a larger slipcase. I mean, to answer your question, if you really want to know, like, I would love to do Hildegard. I was thinking Saint Hildy the Dreamer. Doesn't that sound fun? Saint Teresa of Avila. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some good women out there. I love my daughters, so that's reason why I want to make those. But we can't just have guy saints. I mean, there's some powerful women of the faith that need. They need some airtime, so that's.
I think
hope.
Hilda the Dreamer. That's. I think that is.
Wouldn't that be fun?
I think that is a winner.
Yeah.
My producer editor hat. I think that is a winner.
Yeah. If you come up and visit me sometime, and you sit, you say, "Look, tell me your list on my iPhone. I've got a whole list of saints that I want to tackle." But you know, if people don't want them, they don't want them. So we'll see. I hope to keep making books regardless of whether they're saint books or not, but the saint books are fun and they're cool.
They are fun. And they'd make a great suitcase one day.
They would. And if you buy all three, I have a little mouse that appears. I don't know if you remember in the illustrations, the little mouse appears in every single book. So yeah, like your kids who like finding little Easter egg things like that. I've got Easter eggs in there for you. Tons of stuff.
There you go.
Anyway.
So no, I'm this is just very exciting for me. I love kind of zooming out and kind of looking at what might be there. But yeah, no, check these out. Get these. I think there's going to be a discount code for the show, and then we'll probably have some giveaways on social media. Check the feeds. I mean, who knows how long Twitter we're going to have, but primarily on Instagram and maybe on Twitter as well, but we'll see. So Ned, anything before we get to shout outs, anything that I didn't ask you about that you want to tell folks?
Oh, good heavens. No, we've talked about so much. I'm sure we didn't talk about all the important things because we got so distracted. And you know what? That's what makes these things fun.
That's a good stuff. It's a conversation. I get a couple things in my mind that I want to hit, but I don't like it when I'm listening to a show and it's like, here is my next question.
Question that's, four.
That's not good radio. People are going to be like, man, there's 50 other celebrities that launched a podcast this week that I'd rather listen to. trying to stick to the substance here for everybody. Which brings us to substance shout outs. Ned, what have you been reading, watching, listening to, consuming, enjoying, participating in? What has brought enjoyment or edification to your life that you'd like to recommend folks check out?
Well, I really have been, I just finished the third book in the series of the Thursday Murder Clubs. It's Thursday Murder Club. I think that's what it's called. British author. One of the most enjoyable murder mysteries I've ever read. Hilarious. And also the premise is that it's like four people who are living in a retirement home and they solve cold cases. And because they're older, the issues of mortality come out a lot. So there's some really very interesting conversations about death and dying and just what matters in life. And they're funny, and there's a spy in there. And you know, like it almost has everything that you'd want. I've really been enjoying those a lot. As far as television, I'm a big Doctor Who fan, and I've just restarted watching some of the classics. I have a book called Bigger on the Inside, Christianity and Doctor Who. And I have a desire to come out with a second expanded edition. So I'm basically doing research into some of the more obscure Doctor Who episodes to try and find spiritual themes to tease out. So those are the two things that I'm doing right now. I mean, my daughters and I are watching the new Percy Jackson series.
Okay.
And that's been a lot of fun. As you know, I'm a big Marvel fan, so I watch everything that's Marvel, even if it is horrible. And some of the recent ones have been horrible. But I'm still a fan, and I'm going to still press on.
You've been struggling lately.
Yeah,
I'm rooting for him. The only thing that I have really, and it hasn't happened yet, but the only thing post-Endgame that I feel like has really gotten me going, I can't wait for Daredevil Born Again. That is
well, I mean,
very
did you
exciting
did you
me.
Read the Daredevil Born Again comic? I mean, oh my goodness!
No, I Frank mean, Miller was like my gateway. Like I was obsessed. I mean, I still kind of am, but I mean, Frank Miller, I was obsessed with. For
that
like
was
a
the first Daredevil I read was during the Born Again series. You know, so like I got the best introduction to Daredevil. So yeah, I'm actually very very frightened because that was such a good arc with Frank Miller and you know the artwork is so great and the story was so good and you know the spiritual themes in that were so
yes.
rich like that and Cloak and Dagger there was so much there so I'm very very scared. I mean everyone has panned Moon Knight and She-Hulk, but in the 70s I bought all of those comic books and I was on the front line in front of the store buying those, so I was really happy when those came out. So I can't really be give people a unbiased view of those, but I really enjoyed them. Why are we talking about this? I forget. Oh, I'm doing shout outs. Yeah, that's right. I'm like,
it's good to have light stuff. Like, I'm a big fan of like art that brings you into the headiness and the thickness, but it's also nice to have some light fun as well.
Oh yeah. I love keeping, I have a list of all of my top 10 Christian films that aren't meant to be Christian. You know, like there's so much out in movies that you know, because you're dealing with good and evil and questions of ultimate reality, that film is, I think, one of the best mediums for teasing those things out.
I love it when, like, entertainment television gets substantive. That's a very special thing. I will put this on your radar, and especially I feel like you may appreciate this with all the genre, Doctor Who, comics. I don't know what your engagement, if any, has been with Godzilla, but that new film is incredible. And if you
someone was telling
are
me about that,
able
yeah.
to go to a theater, if you are able to get to a theater, it's incredible. I've not seen all. I got really into it a few years ago. And there's like 37, 38 films total.
Oh,
I've
right.
seen many
yeah.
of them, not all of them, but the new one manages to be incredibly fresh, incredibly substantive. It's set in the direct aftermath of the war with some
well,
very
see, that's
serious
what really excites
themes.
Me. Someone was telling me about that.
Yeah.
I was like, that is really clever. And I'm really excited. And I'm a big Ultraman fan. So like
yes.
Godzilla fits right in there. So yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to take you up on that. I think I'm going to have to go see it because I mean, black and white and set right after the war. It's a brilliant, you know, combination of all those things. So,
'cause I mean, the monster stuff is incredible, but it deals with war, deals with survivor's guilt, deals with like the devaluing of life and the whole idea of a kamikaze pilot, like
mm-hmm.
all that deep stuff in a Godzilla movie with great monster destruction as well. Like it really blew my mind. Like I've seen so many, and a lot of them do touch on deep themes, but how 70 years in, 38 movies in, it was incredibly fresh, and I commend it to anybody who would actually give it a chance.
Yeah. All right. That's what I'm doing next week. Sign me up.
Excellent. And you mentioned Ultraman. I don't know if any of our guests would know who that is. When I was getting into Godzilla, I showed my kids love Ultraman, and Ultraman is probably responsible for many of my son's injuries over the last year or two. Recreating,
well, yeah.
It's essentially like giant monster WWE.
Which that's
is
what it is.
More fun. It's a lot more
yeah.
fun that way.
Ultraman is the only costume I ever bought. My mom would always have us make our costumes, but there was that one year I was like, "Yeah, Mom, I like making the costumes." And really, my mom was really very, very artsy, so she would make some great costumes. But I'm like, "I got to be Ultraman this year," so I bought the box, and it was a horrible costume. You know, it's all I couldn't breathe out of it and everything, but you know, I had to be Ultraman.
I love it. Well, Ned, this was a pleasure. Other than the book links, Every Moment Holy, where would you like to direct folks to follow you, follow your work, the IVP line, Every Moment Holy? What would you like folks to, what kind of links would you like me to put there for folks?
Well, I mean, it'd be nice to follow my professional website is worldsandimages.com. The name of my company is based on the last island they get to in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Ramandu's Island. It's called World's End, and that's the name of my company. So you can check me out there. But really, I'm on Twitter and all those other things, but Instagram is where you're really going to find me the most. I'm always putting things up on Instagram, showing people me carving my linoleum blocks or little illustrations I've done, or I definitely feel that whole like pressure. Why haven't I shared something within the last 5 hours? And so Instagram, a lot of content, as the kids would say. So that's where
you know, normal art stuff, right? Just the
artsy,
normal process of an artist.
You know, I Michelangelo, he was always showing stuff on Instagram. Like he was on there all the time. So I'm just trying to keep up with his benchmark.
Well, Ned, this was excellent. I hope to have you and your collaborator back. You guys are welcome. Coming months, let's get that set up.
I would love to
have that conversation.
Yeah. This is great. Well, I've really enjoyed this, and yeah, you've talked about all of my favorite things. So this is actually too much fun. It's going to be
excellent.
Very disappointing. Every other podcast I'm on, I'm like, can we talk about Ultraman? And they'll say no. I'm like the last guy
like,
let me talk about Ultraman.
What are you talking about?
What a lame podcast this is. My goodness. Can we talk about the substance? Let's go back to the substance.
So that was Ned. Had a really wonderful time talking with him. We got a great library. Go back and listen to some of that stuff if you haven't. A lot of wonderful guests. But I love it when I get somebody. I could talk to this person for another several hours if it wasn't, if this wasn't virtual, or if we didn't have to go. We recorded this one pretty late at night, but I just love talking with Ned. I look forward to hopefully having him back. Again, Every Moment Holy is a wonderful resource, and I would love to just, yeah, hear his heart on that, and kind of hear more about how that project came together and what's in store in the future. Links will be in the show notes for St. Valentine and his other IVP books, which I believe you can get 20% off in free shipping with code IVPPOD20. That's IVPPOD20 for 20% off in free shipping for Ned's books. They're really fun. It's really good. The next show we put out will be our first director that actually comes on to talk about their film. It is a first-time director. Listeners, Google the name John Carroll Lynch. You will recognize his face. Many of you may notice him from Fargo or Zodiac, playing allegedly, most likely, the guy who was the Zodiac killer, Arthur Lee Allen. But he's got 125 some odd credits on IMDb, film, television. Back in 2017, John Carroll Lynch directed his first film, which also coincidentally was character actor Harry Dean Stanton's final film. It's called Lucky. It's incredible. It's an absolute masterpiece. I've seen it several times. I've introduced it to many people. It's one of the movies that I have taken up to just show people because I love it so much and not enough folks have seen it. So every now and then I've tweeted about it. And during the strike, I think it was, I was talking with friend of the show and past and future guest on this upcoming episode, Abby Olchesi, a local Kansas City film critic here, saying, "Hey, Mr. John Carroll Lynch, would love to talk to you about Lucky sometime if you're willing." And because he wasn't working, he was striking. And he said, "Yeah, sure. After the strike is over, let's get in touch." And I was elated, but I was also like, okay, I'll try. I'll reach back out to you. We'll see what happens. And after the strike, terms were met and everything was settled. I hit him back on Twitter. He followed me immediately. We went back and forth a couple times and we have our very first Substantive Cinema episode with a director, big name, big movie, incredible movie. So Abby Olchesi and I will be talking with John Carroll Lynch about his directorial debut, Lucky, on the next Substantive Cinema. If you have Hulu, it's streaming there. If you have a good local library that has Hoopla access, it's on there as well. It's streaming a few places, but check it out. It is a beautiful movie about aging and mortality and just the existential questions that we can't not ask once we get to a certain age and realize that the end is imminent. So very long promo for next week. If you like the show, you want to help us keep going, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/thesubstancepod for as little as $3 a month. You can do more. You can do a $10 a month limit. We will not stop you from doing that. Patrons there get early and exclusive content. They get to vote on future shows. And just help us get to go forward. We are considering maybe doing a Discord in the future. TBD on that. If that sounds super exciting to you, let us know. Maybe we can get that ball rolling early if there's enough interest in that. Or if monthly support is not your bag, but you want to help us out, send us some tips over at Cash App at $TheSubstancePod. For a while, we had one listener every month send us $10 on Cash App. He's like, "I'll support you monthly, but I don't want to commit." So we appreciate it however you do that. Share the show with your friends. That's always the best way to actually support the show. We'll absolutely take your money. Our hosting for audio, I think, is coming up. So if anyone wants to help us with that, greatly appreciated. Text the show to your friend. Throw it up on your stories. Tweet it. Threads it. Blue sky it. Whatever you do. We appreciate you guys. We appreciate you. Yeah, there's a nice little rhyme in there. Have a great week, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you again next time for a very special episode of The Substance. And when you have people who their main deal is illustrators, almost always comics as a kid was a part of that.
Oh, it goes back to, I mean, you mentioned Kirby, one of my favorite artists, and I would encourage all your listeners to look him up. Steve Prince. He's he does printmaking like I do. Well, we both use the same medium. He is just out of my league. Fantastic artist. And we were talking one time about, you know, art making and all this stuff. And it came back to, well, what about comic books? And he just lit up. He goes, well, of course, Kirby. And you look at his work and he doesn't look like Kirby, but you see kind of the heavy line work and the stylized hands and feet that Kirby would bring in. And you see that in, you know, once you see it, or once you know that Steve Prince liked that kind of stuff, you see it all in his work. And it's fantastic. Anyway, yeah, highly recommend Steve Prince. If anyone takes anything from this podcast, go check out Steve Prince.
I am writing that down, and that should be in the show notes, listeners.
All right.
Hit me on social. Hit us up if I don't properly get his stuff out there. I really appreciate what they do, and I would love to connect with them more, maybe offline. I'd love to connect with Andrew Peterson, with his music, with his children. I mean, I'd love to really talk to him about his children's books. Well, talk about his good kids' books.
The Wing Feather books are great. And then he's got some art and faith stuff, Adorning the Dark and different things
yes.
that he's written. Yeah, highly recommend him. And my friend Doug, who wrote the Every Moment Holy, you could have us both back on. We could do a tag team, and that'd be fun. So,
hey, let's do it. I'm very open, and I think our audience would love that. And I would love that. Over the years, I've just accumulated a ton of stuff from various publishers. Mm-hmm. I'd love to start like a Substance, like little free library, and just disseminate them into the community.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. This podcast will go out, and then people will know, and then they'll think I'm brilliant, and you know, baby steps.
And sorry about the mouth sounds.